I'll tell you, brother, how to wait. All right, all right, all right. Why do the Constitution? Well, you know, they don't want to change your head. And the institution, well, you know, better free your mind instead. Go kind, pick your chairman, Mal. Gonna make it anyway, anyhow. All right.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Golden Years in the Red on Tuesday, January 29th at 5:30 p.m. at the Multnomah County Central Library in Portland. Golden Years in the Red with Student Debt will feature informational speakers and people who will share their stories about debt, including garnishment of Social Security checks for student debt when grandparents and parents co-sign student loans. Again, that's Golden Years in the Red on Tuesday, January 29th at 5:30 p.m. at the Central Library, 810 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KBOO. Consider adding KBOO to your will or add KBOO as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KBOO along with your family and friends in your legacy giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KBOO to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your considerate future gift. Contact us at 503-231-8032 or email development@kboo.fm to notify us of your plans.
Good morning. It's 9:01. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And coming right up, it's the radio activist. Suzanne and Lisa are here to bring you news of the community. And then at 10 o'clock, we got Flashpoints. And 11 o'clock, the Recovery Zone joins us. So please stay tuned to KBOO, KBOO Portland.
It is 9:03. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM in Hood River, and 104.3 FM in Corvallis, Albany. This is The Radio Activist. I'm Lisa Loving. My friend and compatriot Suzanne LeGrand is here. And today, we're going to be talking about upcoming assault weapons bans proposed in the legislature. Maybe a few other things as well. And I was sitting here trying to figure out, like, all the names of all of our guests, because we're going to have a big pile of people in here. So first we have Reverend Mark Knudsen. Thank you so much for being here.
Lisa, thank you.
It's really a joy. And we're going to be joined by Reverend Lynn Schmautz to also talk about Lynn, what's her?
Smouse Lopez.
Smouse Lopez, and also a very big deal. And also, we have a super cool attorney who knows all kinds of things. It's Elizabeth McKenna. Thank you so much for being here. No, I'm holding on to your card, Elizabeth. That's mine now.
I just want to correct. I am a retired attorney.
Okay.
So I'm not practicing, but I was for many years. So.
Great. So gun control in the Oregon legislature, I think last year, people tried to put some sort of assault weapons ban on the ballot last year. People have been working on this for a few minutes. So, Reverend Mark, can you talk about, like, what are we talking about on the legislative agenda? The legislature started meeting this week.
Let me say this. Many of us have been working on this for a lifetime. Like freedom to marry, the same thing. Sanctuary, immigration rights, housing, renewable energy. I mean, this all, any of us who lived for more than a few years, it's part of who we are. And so, what happened is in 2016, we brought together several hundred people at Augustana, including 100 leaders from various traditions and elected leaders as well. And we pledged then we were going to ban the sale of assault weapons. This was after that terrible summer of 2016.
Wait, what happened in the terrible summer of 2016? Let's make it real right now, can we?
Well, there were shootings in different parts of the country, mass shootings, and vigils were held. But we decided we wanted more than a vigil.
Okay, now go. Yeah.
Okay. So what happened is we were planning 2020, and Parkland took place. And with the death of those students and the outcry of students in our community and across this nation, students have always led revolutions. They've always led change. And so those voices were loud and clear, and we decided now was the time, right now. So we started that initiative back in March of 2018. Just nine months ago.
Now who's we?
Lift Every Voice Oregon is the name of our organization.
And we'll talk about that a little bit more later.
It's interfaith and it's people of goodwill. Our steering committee is as diverse as you'll ever see because we want people around this world to see that Muslims and Jews and Hindus and Christians and Sikhs and Native American spiritual leaders, other people of faith and people just goodwill have this moral calling, not to stomp on somebody, but rather to make our society that beloved community that we talked about all weekend that Dr. King really encouraged us to be about. And so we brought a coalition together of students. We've had interns from colleges through the summer. And we were going to go in 3 months do something that's never been done. And that was to get this on the ballot, and we know we would have won. We had 3,000 volunteers come together around the state in less than 3 months.
Wow.
And had we got the go-ahead from the Supreme Court, they got caught up on the language of assault weapons, which was created by the NRA, after all. And we had more opposition than any ballot measures ever had. Usually 10 people respond to wording for a ballot measure. We had 1,000 respond against us. And this is not about taking, you know, if you're a hunter and stuff, that's all there. But we wanted to say weapons of mass destruction have no business in our society. And our youth are the ones that are crying out. So we're not about just wait. And everybody thinks about, you know, people talk about chronological time. Wait till the legislature. Wait till the next time. Give it time. You know, what did Dr. King say after Montgomery, after the march from Selma, and for the Birmingham jail, he said this actually, why we can't wait. And we're in that same place. So rather than go with a chronological time, we went with Kairos time. And theologically,
Kairos time?
Theologically speaking, Kairos time is that moment in time when it's right. You don't plan for 2 or 3 years. You don't plan for, you say, this is the moment in time.
It's kind of like time of useful consciousness.
It's the CS, yeah. You got it. And so we're the same group that had the ballot measure, IP43. And when we hit that roadblock, we were ready to go. We would have had 100,000 signatures in a day. We had a plan around the state that never has been done before. We would have had it on the ballot, but we got stopped. And time stopped. But did we go away? No.
How did you get stopped?
Supreme Court. Ballot title. It wasn't about the initiative. It was about the ballot title because of the word of assault weapons. And the NRA fought that strongly. But they created that back in the 80s to sell more weapons. So that was the irony of it all. So as people of faith and goodwill, you don't walk away. You just may get quieter for a while. So our church basement, there's an office of 8 desks. We had interns over the summer. We had others, a lot of volunteers. And they kept working and working and working to this moment. And people may have thought we disappeared. Not at all. We've built the organization even larger now, 4,000 volunteers around the state of Oregon, every part of the state, gun owners, non-gun owners, veterans, people who marched against wars. It's a mix of people, all backgrounds, all ages, and diversity. Because when we talk about banning the sale of assault weapons and large capacity magazines, that affects mass shootings. But those large capacity magazines, affect every ethnic group because of the way they can be using handguns. And so we think of gun violence in this nation. So we haven't gone anywhere. We're ready, and we are poised, and we're going to put the full court press on the legislature. Get it done now. Get it done by February 14th. That's our challenge, because that would be the anniversary of Parkland and part of this state's history. You know, we have 40,000 years of our Native American sister brothers who being here, but the state will be 160 on February 14th in terms of state of Oregon. Let's do it and get it done and get on with the other important issues that need to be done in this legislature. So that's where we are. Sorry, I'm on a we are ready.
So
we are poised.
What is being done at this point is again another proposal to ban assault weapons.
We have two pieces of legislation.
Two legislative proposals.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Two bills, and Liz McKenna, who is here, chairs our legal team. We have a large legal legislative team pro bono. And our first meeting we had back in March, we had 14 people on the table. Mm-hmm. We were told by experts you can't do this. It won't happen. But we think we've created a movement in this state that's going to open the door for a lot of other bills, like the safe storage and the student bill that's being proposed. Because when you put the marker out here to ban the sale of assault weapons, which is a symbol, it creates room for a lot of other bills to take place.
Right.
It creates a culture saying we need to deal with all of this now. So we're hoping the legislature runs with it and makes it happen. Go back to your question.
It's great. What I wanted to ask was if Elizabeth could actually
describe,
multiple other gun control measures on the table,
yes,
in the legislature. The Oregon State Legislature, I believe, just started to convene yesterday.
Yes.
Where Oregon, you know, it's kind of like Brigadoon. We only do it sometimes. We're not always convening a legislature in the state. But Elizabeth, if you could tell us about these specific to legislative pieces that we're talking about right now.
Sure. There are other pieces of legislation, and in general, they're all good. And, you know, I'd be happy if they were all passed. But our two pieces really deal with these very dangerous weapons. We split up what was the initiative into two parts. One of them is directed at large-capacity magazines. And that's defined as some magazine that's over 10 rounds. That means after you shoot 10 rounds, you have to reload. And it seems like a pretty reasonable thing to do. Many magazines...
It's not a hunting tool. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to go deer hunting with that.
Well, no. In fact, if you're hunting for large game, you can only have five rounds in the chamber, or you can have one in the chamber and then five rounds loaded into your magazine. So you can only have a total of six. Otherwise, if you're caught, they might take your license, your hunting license. So
what I hear you saying, I have to take this in for a second.
Sure.
You're saying that Oregon hunting license, Oregon hunter, you know, the Oregon State Department of Fish and Wildlife has stronger safeguards against use of weapons than our own state does, actually.
Now, I'm just curious about that because this is the first time I've heard that. What is the rationale for why they only allow six?
Well, you may have to ask them, but my belief is, and it's six for large game, or five in, you know, and one in the chamber, for some types of birds and other, you know, fowl hunting, it's only three in the chamber. I think it is a safety measure. You're out in the woods. There are often other people out in the woods. Some are hiking, but a lot of them are hunting. And it shouldn't take more than five shots or six to, in fact, shoot a large animal.
So this is interesting. So we say that it doesn't take more than five or six shots to kill an animal, but when it comes to people, we should have an unlimited amount.
But that's not necessarily coded in the law. Let's go back to what we're just trying to come to grips with the hypocrisy that is encoded in our legal system in the United States of America.
Right.
And you know, sometimes you have to stop and breathe for a second. So if you just tuned in, this is KBOO Portland. We are now joined also by Reverend Lynn Smouts Lopez, but we're also talking with Elizabeth right now. This is KBOO Community Radio. This is live radio. Did you doubt that by any chance? We're actually people here in the building, and we're organizing a show. This is such a big deal. But anyway, so we're giving the microphone to Elizabeth to describe what are the two pieces of legislation that Lift Every Voice Oregon specifically is carrying forward in the legislature, and our guests are organizing their rules in the background. This is a very exciting moment. Anyway, Elizabeth, what the heck's on the legislative agenda?
Okay, the first in its proposed bill, we're waiting to get it finalized, we hope this week. The first bill deals with large capacity magazines, and it basically says you have to stop using any that are over 10 rounds. There's just, from our perspective, no reason to, but it's safer to have no more than 10 rounds to use. And if you own a large capacity magazine that's for 20 or 30 or 100, they make them for 100 and probably more, you have to either alter that. So you can plug it up. You can have it so it can only shoot 10, or you can sell it back to a dealer who can sell it out of state, or you can simply destroy it, turn it into the police for destruction. They aren't that expensive. And then thereafter, only in Oregon, only those with 10 rounds or less will be sold. So it's really across the board a way to reduce the ammunition. And you can imagine how important this is. There are several instances where people have had thousands of rounds of ammunition in their attempting to kill a huge number of people. And that we just need to make that unavailable, but also it's an education. It's saying we shouldn't even, I guess, tempt people or have that option there to have more than 10 rounds in any magazine. So there are instances also where someone was shooting and had to stop and reload because they didn't have as large a magazine, I guess, as they wanted. And it was at that point that they were able to be tackled, interrupted, and the killing stopped. So there are many reasons why this is important. The piece of legislation, if you want, it deals directly with the assault weapons. And that is, you might want to know what that means, but we take 2.5 pages to make it very clear what that means. We define them by the make and the model. We also define them by the features they have. And those are features that are really designed to, yes, be more accurate and to be more more lethal, basically to make it easier to kill or destroy whatever target you're shooting at it. So they're basically just a step down from automatic magazines or automatic weapons, which are very, very limited and very regulated by the federal government, where you don't have to stop and reload at all, and you don't have to pull the trigger with an automatic. With a semi-automatic, it's such a light force on the trigger that, in fact, it's almost like not having to pull the trigger. But it allows you to shoot much faster and usually with more velocity. Those weapons we are trying to eventually fade out entirely. Basically, when the law passes, they will be illegal to use, and people will have up to a year to, with their current ones, I shouldn't say they all will be illegal to use, because if you own it, we understand that's a considerable investment, and it's, we're not going to go in houses and take guns. If anyone says that, they're just wrong, and we're not going to ask anyone to do that. But if you own it, you need to register it. You need to be accountable for that weapon and what happens to it and when it's used. It's simply a registration. Won't cost more than the actual cost of it. It's probably $10, $15, but you have to go through a background check. You have to be able to pass the check to show that you are entitled to own a weapon, particularly a weapon of that lethality. So I'll stop with that, and you can ask your questions.
We just heard from Elizabeth McKenna. She is part of the Lift Every Voice Oregon Coalition, and we are talking about a couple of measures that are hopefully going to be discussed by the Oregon State Legislature. You know, the Oregon State Legislature is actually really difficult to cover as a journalist because there's trapdoors all over that place, and you never know what's going to happen. You could send your most beautiful, bright, golden child into that building, and that, you know, and that legislation never sees the light of day. And then sometimes there's something that's really edgy that blows your mind, and it's successful with bipartisan support. So Oregon can be a little bit of a wild card with that. And I wanted to honor Reverend Lynn Smouse Lopez, Ainsworth United Church of Christ.
Yes.
Thank you for being here. How did you get involved? What is your piece of this issue?
I've been involved in working for common sense gun laws for a long time, and it started with my brother being shot. And when he was in college, it interrupted his life. Luckily, he gained it back, and he was able to survive, but it was horrendous. And from that time on, and then other instances in my past where I had a neighbor who tried to kill herself. And then when I pastored in Los Angeles, South Central Los Angeles, I buried young people who were victims of gun violence. I visited young people in prison that were perpetrators of gun violence. And it's been on my heart and in my work for a very long time. And I feel that I believe it is an epidemic, that it's all human made, and there's no reason why we can't do something mm-hmm. to limit gun violence. That's how I got into the work in general, and then Lift Every Voice, I got called probably from Mark, and just got drawn into, and Ceasefire Oregon. My congregation has been part of Ceasefire Oregon for quite a long time, too. And
what
so,
is Ceasefire Oregon?
Ceasefire Oregon is an organization that has been working to end gun violence in the state of Oregon. They've done things in the past, for decades, like gun buybacks to get guns off the street. And then they were able at one point, I don't remember how many years ago, they were able to form a legislative lobbying type group, which is where my heart is to make a difference in the laws and the policies. And they have worked, and they're able to do lobbying. We've worked with a lot of ending gun violence laws and incidents, vigils, planning vigils, and so forth. I have not been on the board, but I have been a supporter. We hosted some of their vigils for the Umpqua City College massacre. We hosted the vigil for that with Ceasefire Oregon.
Ceasefire Oregon is kind of edgy.
Yeah.
They're kind of edgy, and they freak out. I'm going to say this. They freak out Democrats a little bit. I've seen it. I've watched it happen. It's because people... I don't know. I can't say why, but Ceasefire, they don't give up. And there are some... You know, when you're dealing with that legislative level, right? On the legislature, that is like one of those big three-dimensional chess games like in a Harry Potter book. And there's monsters, and they're picking each other up and throwing them down on the board, for real. And sometimes, you know, the politics of these issues... I mean, we've seen liberal, if gun control was something that liberal positivity could achieve, it would have already been achieved, right? I mean, I feel as if sometimes we see people who cut deals around some of this stuff where they think that it's so big that they can't possibly do anything. And I used to kind of think that too, gun control. Like, I'm just talking about my own family. Right? My beloved sisters, all that. Like, this is like the Civil War in my family. And Washington State passed the lock up your gun or else law. Boy, my family melted down. Right? Not all my family, but my family that's all about gun control. They were like, no, someone's going to arrest my husband if he forgets to put the key in the lock after he wakes up in the morning. I'm like, that doesn't seem like that is what that's about. But I just want to put this to you. What is the biggest obstacle, really, for us to pass these heckin' laws? Because we have been talking about it for a few minutes, and then I do want to go and also for sure talk about the event coming up on Sunday. We should talk about that multiple times. But what's the holdup, Reverend Mark?
Well, Lisa, and one historical point, I was with one of our 97-year-old rabbis the other night, and Rodney Page and Rabbi Stanford, and I was reminded that Ceasefire Oregon was birthed through Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon.
That's radical.
Right?
I'm putting that on the table.
Yeah, no, I want you to know that. That's how it
radical.
Began. And so this is not old to people of faith. Right. And I want to say, too, we take the high road. Dr. King's Six Principles of Nonviolent Direct Action. It's on the back of this one, but most of our flyers have that. Everything we do has that, because he taught you don't hate the other. You may not like what's going on in society, and you have to change it, but you try to transform the hearts and minds of others. And as people in our society, when we do our better selves, we let go of some things in order to make things safer and better. You know, I knew men who used to love to drive kids around in pickup trucks, but when we had the seatbelt law, they understood they were putting those kids at risk, and they made the change on behalf of our children. So I'm really calling on every Democrat, Republican, Green, Independent, whoever in our legislature, go to the higher ground this session. Show the nation. This will, you know, they have the opportunity to pass two laws right here that will put Oregon out in a bellwether position in this nation when students across this country are crying out, saying this. We know assault weapons aren't the number one gun that kills, but it's the number one symbol for young people. That's what they dream about. That's what they are fearful about. And I trust Oregonians, all of us in this state, can go to that higher ground and put old squabbles behind it. If I had a gun, I'd want to lock it up. I had a friend shoot one in fifth grade that his dad had in the garage, and it went off as a Luger. It scared the out of all of us. No, there are common sense things we can do. Hunters can still hunt. We have hunters in this. We have people all over the state, rural, suburban, urban. This is not an urban issue. This is the statewide. We have people on the coast. We have students in Corvallis who gave us, they collected money and sent it to us. We're grassroots. We're talking $25, $50, $100. We don't have any big money in this. Somebody said we're getting money from Bloomberg. No, it's all Bloomberg. Individuals. It's all individuals, and we're making it happen. I was taught, you know, the more, you know, oh, I could go on with this. So what are the obstacles? The obstacles is wanting to be stuck in a place that really makes no sense. You can't hunt with an assault weapon. The one hunters I know would get out of the forest if they saw somebody coming in with one. They're scared. Law enforcement doesn't want to walk in a home with an unregistered weapon that can wipe out, you know, 15 people. This is cross-section, all of us. We have 82nd Airborne members who are on this campaign. We're gonna have veterans, and we had the initiative going. We're going to have 50 veterans on Harleys with or whatever motorcycle you want to ride, with American flags, bringing the petitions to Portland from around the state. We're going to have them come over the Sylvan Pass and have a great photo op to see all of us in this together. So we're just calling out for all Oregonians. Let's do the right thing. And the voices of our young are what are driving this. I've got a big, big family system, very diverse, very multicultural. And I can tell you story after story. I'm going to sit in a meal over the Thanksgiving holidays with one of our freshmen in high school. I'm not going to go deep because I want to put him at risk. We asked teenagers not to use their last names when they work with us. We don't want to put them at risk. But I said, what are the three challenges you have in high school as a freshman? You know, they change so quickly and they go become freshmen. And he said, well, let's see, my number three challenge is getting good grades. It's okay, what's number two? Number two is a mass shooting at my school. Number three is the big earthquake. Number one is the big earthquake, so that earthquake. But earthquake, mass shootings are his number one concerns as a high school freshman, not grades, not friends. It's, let's wake up, Oregon. And let's wake up the nation. It's time. And we're here. And obstacles, you know, as people of faith, we're always told impossible. We're all the time. If we took impossible for an answer, we would not even stepped out on anything. But we believe you step out in faith. And when you step out in faith with a vision of what can be, not what is, but what can be, you're proactive, you're loving, you transform hearts, souls, minds with love. You know, and that's not just people of goodwill, it's everybody. Things can change, and they can change in the blink of an eye. You may have to work for years till you get to that place. I remember when Freedom Mary, you know, happened. It was, what a day that was, doing Melody Ballroom, all those. But it took years. But we've taken too long. I've been at this since I was in high school. And here we are all these years later, and we're still saying, why can't we do it? We can do it. So I'm calling out the legislature. I know our governor is ready to sign, I bet, our bills. I can't speak for her by any means, but I think we're ready. So legislators, be courageous. Everybody's at King rallies this past week, and I saw a lot of elected leaders. Let's do it. The time is now. Well, let's do the time is now and get this done.
So you're talking about a lot of grassroots support for this.
It's across the board. I mean, I'm talking Ashland, Oregon, somebody calls. Bend, we have a group over there. Pendleton, we have groups. Grants Pass, Medford, Astoria, Seaside. It's all over the state. And these are people who have relatives who hunt, and they know they're not going to lose that. Right. They're not going to lose that potential.
So it is interesting. I would like to understand a little bit more because it makes so much sense. It's so obvious. Why would anybody oppose this? So I'm wondering if either of you could speak to that.
I think, and you asked about liberals opposing it or not stepping forward and making sure this got passed. And I'm not in everybody's mind, but fear is a big thing. And it takes a lot of guts and a lot of courage for legislators to sponsor bills like this and to go forward with them because they get a lot of death threats. They get threats of all kinds. Then the other piece, I think, fear and money. And unfortunately, the cynical part of me thinks money's a real big deal.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about how that works, the money?
Money is in forms of who's going to get money to run their elections and support them. Money, you know, where the profits are made, so who gets the louder voice are the people with money, the companies with money. I think money has a big part of this. I don't know details, and I'm not accusing anyone, but the my experience in general in any issue is money in the bottom line of profit and fear for politicians on not getting the support they need to be elected kind of plays into that too.
Yeah, I want to say there is a lobbying organization. It's called the Oregon Firearms Federation.
Yes.
And they're organized lobbyists. You know, if you want to know how any legislature works, check out Legally Blonde 2, for real. Go watch that movie. That movie is, it's about the hypocrisy of the legislature. Sally Field is that delightful, wonderful, liberal Democrat who won't support an animal welfare bill because one of her biggest supporters is threatening her and saying that he won't support it. And, I can't say that because there's this saying that you can say, but it's got obscenities in it, and I wouldn't be able to say it on the air. But I will say Oregon seems like kind of a hay patch, but a lot of people throw a lot of their weight around here. And one of the really interesting things, I think, and I do want to ask you who your supporters are in the legislature. Like, you must have a couple of legislators that are carrying your football
forward. We're going to unveil those on Sunday.
Which is
the beginning
great.
Part. So I do want to give the plug. Sunday at 6 o'clock. There's no cost.
Let's talk about that right now.
Sunday at
6.
You
have a big, fabulous thing going on.
We've got jazz legends.
It's the Interfaith Campaign Vigil and Rally. So it starts at 6. It's at the Augustana Lutheran. What's going to happen?
Get there early. We'll probably have speakers outdoors as well. We can get about 800, well, maybe 1,000 in one way or the other. And so we have, you know, we have Marilyn Keller, she's in the Jazz Hall of Fame singing. Shirley Nanette, who's Hall of Fame. Ron Steen, legend in Oregon. And we have a dozen musicians. Francisco Geary will be playing. We'll have some of our Native American members drumming as we begin, and flutes. And George Mitchell, who was the pianist for Diana Ross the last 35 years. He just went on tour with us. I said, George, bring her back to sing at one of our fundraisers.
And Dan Gaynor.
Dan Gaynor from your church, of course.
Yeah.
So the music is going to be, and it's going to be woven with short voices, not long speeches by anybody, but short statements at the end of it. So all of you in Oregon who are head of the PTA or your elected official or whatever, come, because we'll have a reception ahead of time, and we're going to have an open mic like we did for Francisco Geary, where a city council person, I am so-and-so, and I'm in solidarity to end gun violence. I'm so, we had, we'll have a, we'll, we're gonna have 100 leaders. Now, when those 100 grassroots leaders and then everyday people like me and some of us around this table speak out, that's gotta send a powerful message to the legislature. That's what we're doing. We'll raise some funds that night, but if you only give a dollar, that's fine. But what we really wanted to say, we are in this together. We're encouraging faith communities and others around the state to do some kind of thing on that day. And then we're going to begin the equivalent of Moral Mondays, but it won't be every Monday. We're going to have an event each month at a synagogue, a mosque, a church, until this passes. And this is going to grow around the state. So you'll hear in Astoria where they're gathering someplace on the same day we are in Portland as they are in Grants Pass. So Sunday night, 6 p.m., you'll be out of there by 8. But we're going to end with candlelight. So can you imagine 1,000 people pouring out on the street on 15th and Knott with candles to say, it's time. It's time. And I can't underscore enough, we have student speakers there. Students are central to this, and their voices have been leading. So we're walking alongside, and we want to make this happen. It's going to be beautiful. If you just want to be inspired, come. But you'll be inspired to do more. And we know the legislators who come that night, we're hoping to get, I'll be calling them all up this week, actually. I'm going to call all 90 and send them all a personal invitation.
Let me know who doesn't show up, and I'll call them too.
Well, I even went to the offices of some of our, who spoke strongly against us and tried to meet them, but I didn't get a chance to meet them. It's about relationships. And when you know somebody, you don't have to agree on everything, but you can make things happen that really build a beautiful society. So I'm not going to stay stuck. You have to be aware of the ugliness of things in our society, but you have to vision what can be and do that with hope and with integrity and with a culture that says we can do this, especially for our young leaders.
You're listening to The Radio Activist. We're here on these airwaves at KBOO Community Radio. I'm Lisa Loving, my friend and compatriot Suzanne LeGrand. Every week, except for the first Wednesday in the month, we're here bringing activists, handing people the microphone so that you can hear directly what's going on around you. Don't wait to hear it, you know, on the nightly news. The goal of this show is to give you the tools to make your world a better place. That's why we're here. We're joined today by Reverend Mark Knutson of the Augustana Lutheran Church, Reverend Lynn Smaus-Lopez at the Ainsworth United Church of Christ, and Elizabeth McKenna, all from the Lift Every Voice Oregon Coalition. You're listening to people tell these incredible stories. By the way, we've mentioned Francisco Aguirre. He's Facebook messaging me right now. And so if you're listening right now, I want you to think about the fact that this is your community. This is all of us together. Yes. I need you to think about it like that. We're not chucking gravel against the side of a barn now. You're in the middle of it. Okay, so get ready to get active, and that's what we're talking about. This event, Sunday, January 27th, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church. That's at Northeast 15th and Knott. You'll see it. I just want to recommend people, sometimes it's hard for us to get out of the house, but this is going to be a hub of community like we rarely see. And I know it's King Birthday Week, and everyone gets together in King Birthday Week, but this is different. So, and by the way, I think it's lifteveryvoiceoregon.com. But now I want to go back to our guests.
Can I just say one thing, Lisa?
Oh, yeah.
I want to invoke a few of the names. Rabbi Michael Kahana, Congregation Beth Israel. He's a director, as is Reverend Smaus-Lopez. Iman Muhammad Najib. He's a director from the Muslim Center on just a few blocks away. My wife, Tamara Knutson, she's a director. Our legal team leader is a director, Liz McKenna, and Reverend Alcina Boozer, one of the legends in this state. She's sat down with Nelson Mandela, and she sat down with Archbishop Desmond Tutu. She's just turned 80, went to her 80th birthday party. We had a great time. But she's principal of Jefferson High School, and she's an Episcopal priest. Amazing. That's just part of who we are. And then we have young leaders tied in. But we want to really make sure that we speak about the diversity of this campaign in terms of culture, in terms of gender, sexual orientation, in terms of ethnicity, in terms of place.
Faith,
of course, yeah. And the reason we wanted to make Lifted Voice have faith leaders at the core of it is because this to us is an ethical, moral issue. If human life was beautifully made from whatever tradition you come from, to use a weapon of mass destruction to take someone else's life, that hits the top of the barometer on what is not right and what is wrong. And so we come together with great energy around this. It's not about us. It's about how we determine, however that you determine, but how we were created to be. And, you know, beating swords into plowshares, spears into pruning hooks, nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall we study war anymore. That's biblical. And it's all over the place in Scripture. So we're doing it from the heart. And it's not about our own great thoughts or minds. It's about what we're called to be about, weaving the beloved community.
Hard to follow up on that one. It's hard to follow up on that one. I do want to say, though, if you're listening right now, the purpose of this show, The Radio Activist, is to make you understand that it's not hopeless. All these issues are not hopeless, and I hope someone out there is taking that in, right? Sometimes people are cranky about organized religion. Stop for a second and breathe, and you should consider coming to this event and looking around. This is exactly the kind of situation that made us want to create this show in the first place, because this is the picture that you don't often see when you're looking at watching TV or listening to whatever the heck. There's so much unity out here, and this is the place where you can tap it. I just have to say that straight out. And now I think we need to talk about Francisco Aguirre.
Yes.
So one of the things, and Francisco, you're awesome! One of the things that always makes me think of Augustana differently is that, you know, back in the day, back in the 80s, I think it was, I remember, and now I will cry. No, I won't. The Salvadoran folks that were coming up here to escape the death squads. And I want to say that the Catholic Church on Alberta Street, St. Andrew's, opened, I feel as if that was a sanctuary, and it was dangerous. It's not casual. It's not really a slumber party, okay, when churches do that. And so there's actually a history of that. Right here in Portland, which we will talk about as being the, you know, what is it, the whitest city in the United States, but that's not the whole story either. And so then came this amazing, another man from El Salvador, Francisco Aguirre. And I'm just going to roll it over to you, Reverend Mark. What happened with Francisco? I feel like this is a beautiful story of support, and there's more support that we can offer to Francisco after we talk about this. But please, tell that story.
And I'll shout out to Francisco and Dora, and your daughters are probably in school right now, but thanks for the t-shirts you sent me just on Sunday with Archbishop Oscar Romero, one pink and one black. I'll take the pink one. My wife can have the black one. But thank you to Francisco, this battle is not done, and you know that. I pray every day, not only for you and your family, but for 12 million people in this nation who are living in fear constantly. And I pray for 69 million refugees in the world. This is part of our faith communities that have been helping to resettle refugees for centuries, because we all are at various points. So who is any of us to claim America for yourself? I'm sorry, I've got to get that in. Francisco Aguirre, we declared ourselves sanctuary in 1996. We had just started a new program. The church had almost closed, actually. And we reached out to the community. The Latino community came and said, can we start programs for women to prepare for the workplace? And I realized there was a raid in Spokane in that early part of 96, and they were afraid. And so I said to them, we're sanctuary. We didn't vote on it. I grew up with that understanding of the church being a safe place. And we just declared it. Then we had to do some teaching in the congregation to bring everybody on board. We weren't tested for 18 years. During that period, several years later, what is now the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice. Thank you. Emerge began as the new sanctuary movement. Lynn's congregation has been right in the thick of it, this St. Andrews as well. But we could go to meetings and say, we're sanctuary. Del Monte raid, we could go. We weren't tested for 18 years. And let me demythologize sanctuary. It's not about being perfectly ready. It's about stepping out and being ready and saying, you respond to human need, not with all the legal questions answered, not with everything. Because too often communities meet and meet and meet and they never act. And our feeling is you put your foot in the water, get in there, stir it up, and the resources come. And that's what happened with Francisco.
And by sanctuary, you mean?
I'm talking about, you know, the world. The world was created to be sanctuary. The whole world, from our theological understanding, but until we get to that place again, we have to have places of sanctuary. So sanctuary with congregations, historical. Back goes Hebrew scriptures goes, and it's creating places where you're safe. You have to treat others safely too, and where weapons, we don't allow weapons in our church. I did a training on race with community leaders for a police department in the state. 40 officers came. They had to put all their guns in the car before they'd come in, and then talk about race. So Francisco Aguirre, so sanctuary, and it's a movement. We were one of six churches of the nation when we did this in 2014 when Francisco moved in, and I went back to D.C. We took over Mitch McConnell's office, the six churches. We met with Homeland Security, and we talked through these six cases. It was pretty, and Mitch McConnell wouldn't meet with us, but his chief of staff had to. And so this is a long battle. So I'm at the coast on September 19th, 2014, and I'm doing a graveside burial in the sea. It's actually my mother's ashes. And I get a phone call at 7:35. Sarah Losa, I want to say invoke Sarah's name, New Sanctuary Movement. She said, Mark, we're at Francisco's house. ICE has it surrounded out in Fairview. 12 people, unidentified, you know, who they were. And 30 of us faith community members from different churches showed up and surrounded ICE. And she said, if we can get him to Augustana, because you're the place of sanctuary right now, can we do it? I could say yes. Didn't have to have a council meeting. Didn't have to have a congregational meeting. You create a culture of responsiveness. I said yes. The ICE had to leave because they had no warrant. Francisco's been teaching people their rights, and he knew his rights. He said, now you can't come in. His little girls are hugging his leg. His son, who is now dead. I'm sorry, Francisco. You need to tell the story yourself, because he went back to El Salvador and was shot as a teenager. He was so traumatized, his son, by ICE from those occasions. He was hiding in his bedroom. And Francisco, they left. They got Francisco. A caravan came to the church. I said, hold a press conference, and they did. And my office manager had never done a press conference. I sent her a statement. She read it. It was Joyce Kinshu, got to call you out. And Francisco led the press conference. And from that moment on, he stayed. I didn't get back for a day. I said, Francisco, you sleep under the altar. Okay? Oscar Romero, let's think about it. Vietnam, when we started putting things out there in the press, people started to respond. Civil rights movement, Montgomery, because there was press and Dr. King and the organizers knew how to use it to tell a bigger story and change the narrative. That's what we did. And so the media, I want to say the mainstream and alternative media like you who tell the truth, not the ones making up stories, we need you more than ever. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is, putting him in front of the camera, the first couple days was, oh, this, you know, criminal, da-da-da-da-da. You know how people just get slammed before anybody knows who they are? By the press coming, we could make sure he told his own story. And so we did all the interviews in the sanctuary with the altar behind, the stained glass windows, Jesus looking from one down at the press too. And we briefed the press saying, when you come into this place, it's sanctuary, so do not ask questions that are mean-spirited. Do not go and talk about him being a criminal. That's over. We're not going there. Hear his story. And because of the press, that story went around the world. And Francisco, and we always made sure he wasn't interviewed. He led the conference, but we would put two of us on either side. And he would talk, and then we'd respond when we were needed. He was one of the leaders. So every night we met for 81 days. We had a big steering committee. Basic Rights Oregon loaned a staff person. Labor loaned a staff person. Latino Network loaned a staff person. And we had probably 30 people, most under 40, a couple of us over 40. And I would put that group of planners, and Francisco often organized and was leading, others took turns leading. That group could get press releases done while we were meeting. They were more efficient than the board of Nike or Columbia Sportswear. When you get young leaders who are passionate about the right cause, there's nothing like it. Francisco's family came every night to the church. We didn't have an apartment. We just set it up. So now we're teaching other congregations, don't figure out everything before you take the action. Declare a sanctuary. Now there's thousands of churches around the country, synagogues, mosques, temples, as well as counties and cities and states that are sanctuary. It's a growing movement, but we have to take on this administration head on. We have to end what we're doing to people. It's wrong. It's terrible. It's hurting people. Francisco, if you were sent back, you'd be dead today. We can't just, this idea of people going back, no. People flee for a reason. And the reason is, it's either wars we helped to start as a nation, it's economic policies we've helped influence that hurt families, it's poverty. People don't leave home just to have a nice trip to the United States. They come here desperately and they want to be welcomed. And as faith leaders, biblical hospitality, it's not radical, it's biblical. It means you welcome the strangers if you're welcoming yourself. The one from another land in your own state should be treated as a citizen, not as somebody to be talked about. Hear the stories. Go deeper. All the listeners, you already do that, but the rest, go deeper, meet people. And Francisco, you'll have to have him on again. We were on once together here, and he and his wife. But there are so many stories.
So many stories. And Francisco, there's a GoFundMe to support him and his printing business. So look for that online. Look for that on GoFundMe.
Let me say this too. ICE, we know, I've gone check-ins with him. We're in federal court still. He still hasn't gotten asylum. If anybody should have gotten asylum, it should have been him. You know, taken by the military and 7, never saw his family again, 6. He has Christmas presents for helmets and guns when he's 7, 8. And never saw his family again. And if anybody deserved asylum coming here at 16, it should have been him. And right now. One story that goes out with it, that when that went on the AP, again, what you do as news people, or persons who do the news, is a story about the AP, and he had a friend of his best friend at 16, they both escaped El Salvador because they were going to be killed. And because the civil war was coming to them, but their sides, they had lists of who was on which side. His friend's in Italy in 2014, when Francisco's living in Sanctuary at Augustana, his friend is reading a paper in a little Italian village in a cafe. And he reads about Francisco Aguirre, who he thought died. Francisco's weeping in the church about the third night into this. I said, what's going on? He goes, my best friend just called me from Italy. He found me. And these two men who thought each were dead 20 years later connected.
You're listening to The Radio Activist on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Lisa. I'm here with my friend and compatriot Suzanne. We're live in Studio 2 with Reverend Mark Knutson of the Augustana Lutheran Church, Reverend Lynn Smaus Lopez of the Ainsworth United Church of Christ, and Elizabeth McKenna, just a generally heckin' smart person. Everyone from the Lift Every Voice Oregon Coalition. We're sitting here and we're talking about issues. We've been talking about the Lift Every Voice Oregon's two attempts at trying to get some sort of a assault ban legislation in the legislature. We could talk a little bit more about that in a minute. We've talked about other things that Lift Every Voice Oregon and this interfaith community has done around supporting families. And
One thing that I do want to talk about a little bit before we move forward, I mean, this is a show about activism. I know we got about 10 more minutes. Want to definitely touch base with the event again and ask more questions about the legislature. But if you're out there listening right now, you're interested in activism, you want to know what's happening that you're not hearing about. Okay. So I want to ask you about other things you're doing, okay, that people could maybe plug into, because we want our listeners right now to be planning their 2019, their social engagements, and thinking about who they're going to be joining to be active with. There's a lot of people that care a lot about law enforcement reform. We're talking about gun control right now. We also talked about our beloved friend, Francisco Aguirre, these issues around ICE, which are, ICE is hot. I said it. What else is on our agenda, Reverend Mark? Let's just get it out.
And I'll defer to my colleagues, too. Okay. I could go a whole list of things. But, of course, in legislature, we're writing letters around the energy pieces that are there, wages. Community Alliance of Tenants is at Augustana as well. And so the tenants' rights bills that are going before the legislature, rent control pieces. I've been a steering committee member of the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform for the last 15 years, how long we've been at it. We've been at it much longer than that with Dr. Haynes and Dr. Bethel. And Joanne Hardesty was part of the steering committee. So was Joyce Harris, Dan Handelman was part of the steering committee. And we have some top lawyers, women lawyers who are pro bono, who have been helping us all along. So we're looking for big changes in policing. That's, you know, this is all part of a whole. It's all part of a whole. Rights of immigrants and refugees being welcomed, gun violence, how, you know, Black Lives Matter, people being shot, we things escalate rather than de-escalate, is part of a whole. And we believe in cultural shifts. And I think there's a hunger. You don't have to be a person of faith. Let me say this. It's not about me having the right faith. I mean, my faith drives me. But I know I have dear friends who are as good a heart as anybody know, and they don't go to church or something like a mosque, but wow, it's all of us. If there is God, God's way bigger than my little mind can figure out. So from my own perspective, I have to work on these issues. And they're broad-based. I mean, in 1979, that's the year I went to that seminar because there was a particular election in 80 that kind of gave, I said, you know, politics just go like this and like this.
We
had a design of the Oregon House. So I was on the state central committee for the Democratic Party then. And I had a parent who was a Republican and one Democrat. So, I mean, you know, those are the McCall, Hatfield. We need to get back to that where we're all thinking progressively, what does Oregon look like? Not my agenda here, but how do we create an Oregon where every young person thrives? Well, back then we even had the perfect Oregon house. It had a solar, it had a windmill on it. It had solar energy. It had geothermal. This is 1979, right? So we need to get on with this stuff quickly. So for faith leaders, again, it's not about us, at least from the traditions we're talking about. It's about how we give ourselves a way to help weave community with people of goodwill throughout this world. And that's what it's about. It's not about having the right understanding who God is, the right understanding of this. You know, we work at our own theological understandings, but the more I know myself and the more I know my own tradition, the more I can sit with my Buddhist friend and we can talk and learn from each other. The greats, the Dorothy Days, the Gandhis, the Kings, go down the list. They reveled in coming together to hear and to talk, not to be better than or right.
We at Ainsworth, we're involving ourselves in the 11 community housing cohort, and we have a vision of at least doing the research and setting the groundwork to see if we could develop low-income housing with our church facility or properties. It's not decided yet, but we have a task force that's working on that. We see housing as a big issue, a huge issue in the city and state, and so we're working towards also advocating for the cutting red tape, for allowing nonprofits and faith communities to build housing much quicker, get things done without the multi-million dollar projects only that tie up so much money and do so little to address the issue. Also, we've been very involved in Emerge, and I was arrested in August for protesting in front of ICE, and there's still more of that coming. We have a member who's now at the border, and I'm looking to go, and other people are looking to go again at the border and witness there. There's so many opportunities or challenges that we need to address. Environmental issues. We had a group that went up to Kelso, I believe it was, where the hearing was, to protect the environment, to fight the pipeline, oil pipeline, and port work. It's just unlimited, the opportunities.
And now Levin Community is another faith-based community that has a location on Killingsworth Street.
Right.
So you're cooperating.
Right. With several other congregations that coming together.
Great. We're thinking about the possibility of running out of show. So I want to go back to Elizabeth and say, okay, give us a rundown one more time about where we are with these two measures in the legislature. They still don't have assigned numbers. You're still massaging the shoulders of the legislators. Tell us more. And how can we get involved?
Okay, and it's not the legislators that are holding up. People call it legislative council who have incredible burden getting everything drafted. And we're just waiting for the last changes to get in. And we hope to get the bills this week. They're in plenty of time. And, you know, we're very optimistic. I have to say, there are so many groups out there, other groups out there also working for legislation. And I should give a shout out to Ceasefire Oregon. I'm actually on their board also, and it's a group that if you go to their website, you can find a list of all of the legislation. They really keep up to date on those things. Their director, Penny Okamoto, is great at just being on top of stuff. But there are other groups also, Moms Demand Action and many others, and we're all. It's Oregonian to do this, but we work together. We want to push all of this forward. And one of the obstacles sometimes we hear is, well, we can only pass one or two pieces or three pieces in this area and that. Well, our concern and our belief is this is a moral, ethical issue, and we need to put a stop to this. I mean, I was a labor and employment lawyer for years and then retired and said, what am I going to do? I'm not going to sit at home. And after Parkland and the ideas churning that there ought to be something done, I just couldn't not join in the initiative and now with the legislation. And we're going to keep moving forward. So we're optimistic there will be gun laws passed and they will change. They will improve the safety. And this is not gun owners against, those of us advocating. We want to join together, have a wonderful dialogue where we talk about how can we have safe gun ownership. It's not that we should have no guns, but these 100-round magazines, there's no use for them anywhere. And we need to have safer guns that people are responsible for, they take responsible care of them, and they still can protect themselves. That's what the Constitution allows you to do. It doesn't say you can own any gun and have 100-round ammunition and all that. It says you can use it to protect yourself.
And I do want to say that on the ceasefireoregon.org website right now, they're very highly focusing on Senate Bill 501. It's called the Students Bill. Yes. This omnibus bill was submitted by Oregon Students for Change, a group of high school and college students who understand the changes we must make to reduce gun violence. Please call the chief sponsors of this bill and give them your support and thanks. They're already receiving threats from the gun lobby, so these courageous legislators need to hear from us. They're naming Senator Wagner and Representative Salinas. That's on ceasefireoregon.org. We are actually running out of show.
Can we say?
Yeah, please. This is our final 2 minutes. Go ahead.
And the threat piece, don't let that stop you. Anybody in Oregon who wants to work on this. I mean, I've got a file thick from Sanctuary, from Freedom of Mary, and you can't look at that. You got to keep moving forward. Don't be afraid. Do not fear is pretty biblical for us. Because if you do, you don't do anything. And it'll stay the status quo. Just let me end by saying this. If you come Sunday night, you're going to be welcomed with open arms. Please invite others. We want it to overflow. And I do have to give a shout out to KABU and Lisa and both of you. Thank you for today.
Thank you.
Because I've been listening to KABU since it started 50 years ago. And I went to Franklin High School, and in other parts of the country at times. But 39 years ago, this week, I met my wife. We were at a joint event with friends, and So the next morning, Super Bowl Sunday, I called up Kabu, and her one of her best friends went by the name of Lady C. She ran the Soul Hour. And so I called Lady C. And I said, Lady C, will you play One in a Million for me? I just met your this beautiful woman and play it. And we've been married now 32 years, almost 33. But thank you, Kabu, because I think you helped me seal the deal with that song. The other thing is, in terms of faith communities, I went on the Civil Rights Triangle, Selma, Montgomery, and Birmingham, and with 32 other faith leaders, majority, only 8 of us were of European American descent, and we were AME, CME, Lutheran, and it was the most incredible trip I've ever been on. But we went to Dr. King's, we went to Dexter Avenue King Memorial Baptist Church. It's a little tiny church. You have the State House, you have all this thing right across the street, and we often look at buildings like Capitol buildings or City Hall saying, that's where it's going to happen. No. Every great movement has come out of the basement of churches, synagogues, mosques, schools, somebody's house. That's how change comes. So come be part of that change, and if we speak with one voice, we lift every voice on Sunday. Look out, it's going to get done quickly by this legislature.
I love you so much, Reverend Mark Knutson. Also, thank you, Lynn Smouse-Lopez, and Elizabeth McKenna, just a generally super smart person. Thanks for listening. Catch up with Lift Every Voice Oregon online at lifteveryvoiceoregon.com. Learn more about Ceasefire Oregon at ceasefireoregon.org. Thanks to our engineer, Tammy Dean. Also, the KBOO volunteer coordinator is Ani Haynes. Radical inclusion is her game. Contact her to be a volunteer at this station. Volunteer at KBOO.FM. You could be behind this mic. We are radioactive. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the NAACP kickoff to Black History Month on Saturday, January 26th at 1 p.m. at the Fort Vancouver Library in Vancouver, Washington. The NAACP kickoff to Black History Month features performances from African drummers, actors and storytellers, artist talks, a presentation by the Buffalo Soldiers of Fort Vancouver, and much more. Again, that's the NAACP.